A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Here's what Daniel wrote us. He's been simplifying his phone setup on a OnePlus Nord 3 5G and now has a SIM slot available for travel. The phone supports eSIM natively, but before his apartment move, he bought one of those physical eSIM adapters that sits in the SIM tray, and naturally, he now has absolutely no idea which box it's in. If he doesn't find it before flying to the US, he'll probably just order another one after he arrives.
The universal moving experience. I moved apartments 2 years ago and I still have a box labeled cables that I'm afraid to open. It's become something between a time capsule and a hostage situation.
There's always that one box. And that made Daniel realize he doesn't actually know what the state of the market is today. So, first question. Have any particular eSIM adapters emerged as the clear recommendation for frequent travelers, or are they all more or less equivalent? If we were buying one today with the intention of leaving it permanently installed, which would we recommend? Second part, he'll be in the US for about a month visiting family. What's the best value mobile data option? And more broadly, if someone travels internationally a few times a year, is it better to buy country-specific eSIM plans every trip, or are there global providers worth sticking with long-term? And then, here's the bigger project. His long-term goal is to move as much of his telephony as possible into Twilio and SIP, using Twilio for both business and personal numbers. In that world, the mobile carrier becomes little more than an internet connection. And he's wondering, are there affordable Israeli data, only eSIM plans that would make this approach practical at home too, letting voice and messaging run almost entirely through the cloud?
So we've got three layers here, and they stack. Hardware at the bottom. Which adapter do you put in the tray and forget about? Data in the middle. What do you actually buy for a month in the States? And what's the long-term strategy for someone who travels a few times a year? Then the application layer on top. Can you run your entire phone number through Twilio and treat the carrier as a dumb pipe? And the Israeli angle runs through all three because whatever Daniel builds has to work at home first.
Carriers have spent decades fighting that exact outcome.
They have, and it's why this project is interesting. If Daniel succeeds, his carrier becomes interchangeable. Swap the eSIM, keep the number. That's the end game. But it only works if the lower layers are solid. A Twilio SIP trunk over a flaky data connection is just a worse phone.
So, let's start with the thing that's currently in a cardboard box somewhere in Jerusalem. The eSIM adapter market. I realize I should back up. What actually are these things? Because if you'd described one to me 5 years ago, I'd have assumed you were talking about some kind of hack.
An eSIM adapter is a physical SIM card that acts as a bridge. It looks exactly like a regular SIM, sits in your SIM tray, but it's programmable. You install a companion app on your phone. The app writes an eSIM profile to the card over the phone's internal interface, and then the phone reads that card as if it were a normal SIM from a carrier. The phone doesn't know the difference. To the phone's operating system, it's just a physical SIM with a carrier profile on it.
So it's a SIM that pretends to be an eSIM that pretends to be a SIM.
That's actually exactly right. It's a physical card that stores multiple eSIM profiles, and you switch between them through the app. The phone sees whichever profile is active as its physical SIM. It's a Matryoshka doll of telephony abstractions.
And Daniel's Nord 3 already has native eSIM support, so why use an adapter at all? This is the part that confused me when I first read his email.
Because he's using the native eSIM already. The Nord 3 has one physical SIM slot and one eSIM. If his primary Israeli number is on the eSIM, the physical slot is open, but he can't put a second eSIM in a physical slot without an adapter. The adapter turns that physical slot into a second eSIM slot. It's a workaround for dual eSIM on a phone that only supports one.
Which is most phones, still.
Most phones, yeah. Even in mid-2026, dual eSIM is mostly a flagship feature. Apple has it on recent iPhones, Samsung on the S series, but mid-range and budget phones almost universally ship with one physical and one eSIM. So adapters fill the gap. The two main players are 5BR, that's the number 5, B-E-R, and ESTK. 5BR has been around longer, their software gets more frequent updates, and they have a larger user base. ESTK is usually cheaper, sometimes significantly, but the software is less polished and the community around it smaller.
How much cheaper are we talking? Is this a meaningful price difference, or are we splitting hairs?
5BR's standard card runs around $25 to $30. ESTK can be found for $15 to $20, so it's a $10 gap. Not enormous in absolute terms, but when you're buying a tiny piece of plastic that does something your phone theoretically already does, the psychological threshold is real. People see $30 for an adapter and think, that's almost what I pay for a month of service.
And for Daniel's use case, leaving it permanently installed, which way do you lean?
5BR. The software maturity matters if you're not going to think about the adapter again. ESTK works, but I've seen more reports of profiles failing to write on the first attempt or the app crashing during a profile switch. None of that's catastrophic, you just try again. But if the whole point is set it and forget it, you want the one with fewer known rough edges. $10 over the lifetime of a device you'll use for years is worth it.
What's the failure mode that actually scares people? Because I've seen forum threads where people are genuinely anxious about these things.
Firmware updates. Both adapters have updatable firmware, and a bad update can brick the card. It becomes a piece of plastic that your phone doesn't recognize. The mitigation is simple. Buy from the official store, don't flash beta firmware, and maybe wait a week after an update drops to see if anyone reports problems. But the risk is real, and it's the main reason these things haven't gone fully mainstream. Most people don't want a SIM card that needs firmware updates. That's a sentence that shouldn't exist.
Right. The SIM card was the one component in your phone that you never had to think about. It was the dumbest smart object you owned. And now we're putting a programmable microcontroller in there.
And that shift is exactly why the anxiety exists. For 20 years, a SIM card was an inert piece of plastic with a tiny amount of storage. You put it in and forgot about it for the life of the phone. These adapters have an operating system. They have release notes. It's a different category of device entirely.
So the adapter isn't a set-it-and-forget-it device in the way a regular SIM is. There's maintenance.
Minimal maintenance, but yes. You're adding a tiny computer to your SIM tray. It needs occasional attention. For someone like Daniel, who's comfortable with technical projects, he's building a Twilio telephony stack, for goodness sake, this isn't a deal-breaker. But you should know it's there. It's like owning a 3D printer versus owning a paper printer. One of them occasionally needs you to update firmware and recalibrate things. The other one just prints.
The 3D printer people are fine with the maintenance because the capability is worth it. Same thing here. The capability is dual eSIM on a phone that doesn't support it natively.
And compatibility with the Nord 3 specifically?
Should work. 5BR lists compatibility with most Android phones running Android 12 and above, and the Nord 3 ships with 13. But I'd still check their compatibility list before ordering, because OnePlus has done some weird things with their SIM interface in the past. A few Nord models had issues with SIM toolkit apps not launching correctly, and that's exactly the mechanism these adapters use to communicate.
What does that failure look like in practice? If the SIM toolkit doesn't launch, what happens?
The companion app can't talk to the adapter. You install the app, you insert the card, and nothing. The app just sits there waiting to detect the adapter. It's a known issue on some OnePlus models, and it's usually fixable with a software update from OnePlus. But you're at the mercy of their update schedule. So yes, verify before buying. The 5BR community maintains a pretty good compatibility spreadsheet.
So the recommendation is, 5BR, official store, verify Nord 3 compatibility, don't touch beta firmware. If his original adapter turns up in a box, great tubby fee. If not, that's the replacement.
That's the hardware layer. Now the data layer. And this is where the numbers get interesting.
A month in the US, visiting family. What's the best value?
Country-specific plans win on price, and it's not close. Arelo's US plan, 10 gigabytes for about $26, valid for 30 days. That's $2.60 per gigabyte. Holofly does unlimited data for the US at around $34 for 15 days, so you'd need two of those for a month, $68. The catch with Holofly's unlimited is the fair use policy. They throttle after a certain threshold, typically somewhere between 1 and 2 gigabytes per day, though they don't publish the exact number.
So, unlimited. Doing its usual work.
The word unlimited in mobile data means limited in ways we'll explain in paragraph 14 of the terms. But for most travelers, Holofly's throttle point is high enough that you won't hit it unless you're streaming video all day. If you're using maps, messaging, email, and some social media, you'll probably stay under.
And the global plans? How do they compare?
Aerolo's Discover global plan runs about $2 to $3 per gigabyte. Country-specific plans are closer to $1 to $2. If you're going to one country for a month, the math is straightforward. Buy the country plan. You save roughly a dollar per gigabyte. And on 10 gigs, that's 10 bucks. Not life-changing, but why pay more for coverage in 40 countries you're not visiting?
The counter-argument is convenience. One purchase, one eSIM, never think about it again.
That's the real trade-off. If you travel 3 or 4 times a year to different countries, buying a new country-specific eSIM each time means researching plans, comparing providers, installing profiles, maybe 15 minutes of work per trip. A global plan means you install it once and it just works everywhere. For some people, that convenience is worth the premium. But for Daniel, who's already deep in the weeds on telephony infrastructure, I suspect he'd rather save the money.
I think you're right. The kind of person running a Twilio SIP trunk isn't the kind of person who pays a convenience premium on data. There's a certain personality type where optimizing the thing is part of the enjoyment.
There's a travel math questionnaire that people get wrong. They think I travel often, therefore I need a global plan. But if you do the arithmetic, say you take 4 trips a year, 10 gigs per trip, country-specific at $2 per gig versus global at $3 per gig. That's $80 versus $120. $40 saved. The global plan only wins if you're visiting enough different countries per trip that buying individual plans becomes annoying.
Or if you're crossing borders mid-trip.
That's the exception. If you're doing a European tour hitting 5 countries in 2 weeks, a regional or global plan makes sense because switching eSIMs at every border is a pain. You'd spend half your trip in the settings app. But Daniel's use case is one country, 1 month, country specific.
And there's a psychological factor here too. When you buy a global plan, you're paying for optionality you don't use. It feels efficient because it covers everything, but it's actually inefficient because you're insuring against a scenario that isn't happening. It's like buying travel insurance that covers skiing when you're going to the beach.
Now the Israeli piece of the data layer. He wants to know if there are affordable data-only eSIM plans here that would let him run this Twilio setup at home.
Partner and Pelephone both offer data-only eSIM plans, but they don't market them aggressively. You kind of have to know they exist. Pricing is typically in the range of 50 to 100 shekels for 10 to 20 gigabytes. The catch is availability. These plans come and go, and sometimes they're buried in the business section of the website rather than the consumer section. You have to check what's currently offered.
So it's not a stable product category you can count on?
Not yet. The Israeli market is still very voice and SMS centric. Data-only plans exist, but they're treated as a niche offering for tablets and hotspots, not as a primary phone plan. If Daniel's Twilio project works, he'd be an early adopter of a model the carriers aren't really set up to support. He might find himself explaining to customer service what he's actually trying to do, and that conversation rarely goes well.
I can imagine. I want a plan with no voice and no SMS. So, a tablet plan? No, for my phone. But how will you make calls? And then you're off to the races explaining SIP to someone who just wants to close the ticket.
Which brings us to the project itself. Twilio and SIP. What does that actually look like?
Twilio is a cloud communications platform. You rent a phone number from them, about $1 per month per number, and they handle all the telephony infrastructure. Inbound calls hit Twilio's servers. Twilio routes them to your SIP client over the internet. Outbound calls go the other direction. You pay about 8.5 tenths of a cent per minute for calls. SMS works similarly, though it's a separate setup.
So Daniel's Israeli number lives in the cloud, not on a SIM card.
His phone becomes a SIP endpoint. He installs a SIP client, something like Groundwire or Limphone, and that app handles voice calls using whatever data connection is available. The carrier's SIM in his phone is just providing internet. It doesn't need a phone number at all.
And this works? I mean, works for day-to-day use?
It works, with two big caveats. First, emergency calls. 911 in the US, 100 in Israel. These don't route over SIP. The SIP client has no way to connect to the local emergency infrastructure. So Daniel still needs a carrier line with a real number for emergencies. He can keep a minimal prepaid SIM for that, but he can't go carrier free.
That's the regulatory anchor. What's the second caveat?
Voice quality. SIP calls are sensitive to latency and jitter. If the data connection has high latency, say above 150 milliseconds, or if packets are dropping, the call quality degrades fast. You get that robotic voice effect, or gaps in the audio. A cheap data plan with congested towers will make SIP calls miserable. This is why the data layer matters so much for Daniel's project. He's not just buying gigabytes. He's buying a connection stable enough to carry voice.
So the dumb pipe has to be a good pipe.
The dumber the pipe, the smarter it needs to be. Carriers optimize their networks for voice, because voice is still their core product. When you move voice to the cloud, you're routing it over the data channel, which carriers optimize for throughput, not consistency. A data connection that's fine for browsing an email might be terrible for SIP. It's the difference between a road designed for freight trucks and a road designed for a smooth passenger ride. Same asphalt, different priorities.
Is there a way to test this before going all in?
Yeah, and it's exactly what Daniel should do. Get a data-only eSIM in Israel, even a short-term one. Install a SIP client, configure it with a Twilio number, and make some test calls. Walk around. Call from different locations, different times of day. See if the quality holds up. If it does at home, it'll probably work in the US too, because American data networks are generally comparable or better.
And if it doesn't?
Then he knows the project needs a better data connection before it's viable. Maybe that means switching carriers. Maybe it means waiting for 5G standalone to become more widespread. Standalone 5G has lower latency, which helps SIP. But the point is to test before depending on it. You don't want to discover that your voice quality collapses during rush hour when the local tower gets congested.
That's a specific failure pattern worth flagging. Network congestion is temporal. Your SIP calls might be perfect at 2 in the afternoon and unusable at 6 in the evening. That's the kind of thing you only catch by testing across different times.
It's the kind of intermittent problem that drives people insane. You pick up the phone, call your mother, and every third word drops out. But only on weekdays after 5. Good luck debugging that.
There's something bigger here. Daniel's project is a test case for whether the carrier can actually be reduced to a dumb pipe today. Not in theory, not in a blog post, but for a real person making real phone calls.
The answer is almost. The pieces are there. eSIM adapters let you add multiple data plans to any phone. Country-specific eSIMs give you cheap data almost anywhere. Twilio gives you cloud telephony at commodity prices. SIP clients are mature and free. The stack exists. The gap is reliability. Emergency calls, voice quality under congestion. The fact that data-only plans are still second-class products. Those aren't small gaps.
They're the kind of gaps that close slowly and then all at once.
That's the pattern. 5 years ago, the idea of traveling internationally without a local SIM was absurd. Now people land, buy an eSIM before they're off the plane and never think about it. The telephony piece is moving slower because voice is regulated differently than data, but the direction is the same. Regulation is always the last layer to shift.
Let's talk about what Daniel should actually do for this trip. He's flying to the US. He may or may not find his adapter. What's the checklist?
Step 1. Look for the adapter. If he finds it, verify it still works. Install the companion app. Check for firmware updates. Maybe load a test profile. Step 2. If he doesn't find it, order a 5-bear from the official store after he arrives. Shipping within the US is fast. Step 3. Buy a country-specific US eSIM. Aerolo's 10 gig 30-day plan at $26 is the sweet spot for a month. If he needs more data, Holofly's unlimited plan is there. But 2 15-day plans at 68 total is pricier. Step 4, before the trip, if he has time, set up a Twilio trial account and get a SIP client installed. Test it on his home Wi-Fi first, then on cellular data.
The Twilio piece might be ambitious for right before a trip.
Fair. The trip is for visiting family. The Twilio project can wait until he's back, but the eSIM adapter and the US data plan are immediate. Those are the things to nail down now. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Get the data working and enjoy the trip.
For the longer-term travel strategy, country-specific plans as the default, global as a backup.
Keep one global eSIM installed with a small data balance, just enough to get online when you land somewhere new. Then buy a country-specific plan for the actual stay. Best of both worlds. You're never without data on arrival, but you're not paying global rates for your bulk usage.
That's elegant. The global plan is the lobby. The country plan is the room.
You don't live in the lobby. You pass through it, drop your bags, and get to where you're actually staying. 100 megabytes to get from the airport to the hotel, then switch to the local plan.
The Israeli data-only situation is the weakest link in this whole chain. If the carriers aren't offering reliable data, only ESIM plans, the Twilio project is a US-only thing for now.
Or a Wi-Fi thing. Daniel could run his Twilio numbers over Wi-Fi at home and fall back to a regular carrier SIM when he's out. That's not the full dumb pipe vision, but it's a practical intermediate step. A lot of people do this without realizing it. They use WhatsApp or FaceTime audio over Wi-Fi and treat their carrier number as a fallback. Daniel's project is just making that explicit and owning the infrastructure.
It's the difference between renting someone else's abstraction and building your own.
There's something appealing about owning your own phone number in a way that no carrier can take away. Port it to Twilio, and it's yours.
Number portability was supposed to solve that, but you're still porting between carriers. With Twilio, the number lives outside the carrier system entirely. It's a different kind of independence. The trade-off is that you become your own telecom provider, and when something breaks, you're the one fixing it. There's no customer support line. The customer support line is you, reading documentation at 11 at night.
Daniel seems like the kind of person who'd prefer that.
The kind of person who loses an eSIM adapter in a move and thinks, I should research the market and build a cloud telephony stack, rather than I should buy another one of what I had. Most people lose an adapter and their reaction is mild annoyance. Daniel's reaction is to question the entire carrier model.
Before we wrap, there's a bigger question lurking here. The eSIM adapter market, is it going to consolidate around one or two players, or is it going to fragment further?
I think it consolidates, but not because of competition between adapter makers. I think phone manufacturers kill the category by adding dual eSIM to more devices. The adapter is a bridge technology. Once mid-range phones ship with two eSIM slots as standard, there's no reason to buy an adapter. The question is how long that takes, and given how slowly phone hardware evolves, probably another 3 to 5 years.
In the meantime, people like Daniel are building the future on top of a $30 piece of plastic from a company most people have never heard of.
That's how it always works. The future arrives in pieces, and some of those pieces are in a cardboard box you can't find. The most transformative technologies often start as niche workarounds that only make sense to the kind of person who enjoys configuring a SIP client. Then the rough edges get sanded down, the interfaces get simpler, and suddenly everyone's doing it without knowing the history.
One day we'll look back and laugh at the idea that your phone number was tied to a specific carrier's SIM card. It'll seem as archaic as having your email address tied to your internet provider.
Which people did, by the way. Your email used to be your ISP's domain. Then everyone moved to independent providers, and now nobody thinks about it. The same thing is happening to phone numbers, just much more slowly.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.